chanson. Écoutez RPT.
Well, I love cubism. It's my favorite style. When I see a cubist painting, I just gotta smile. But there's one painter I'm his biggest fan. He's the father of cubism. His name's Cézanne. Cézanne, the father of cubism. Well, some people say that it was Picasso. Other people claim it was the Chirico. Some people think it was Modigliani. But they're all crazy. It was Paul Cézanne. Cézanne, the father of cubism.
When Paul Cézanne sat down to paint a flower or a face, he had to solve one problem, three-dimensional space. He said, form is content, his work is done. He was right, now he's Paul Cézanne.
Cézanne, 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 le père de cubisme.
Oui, oui, hey, monsieur Kevin, jouez les guitares.
Good morning, and this is Julie Bernard, and this is Art Focus. And we, this morning, have Sam Gould here, who we wish to welcome. And Sam Gould is one of the idea people of Red 76, and we're going to find out about Red 76 this morning. And he also has brought with him two friends, who are Colleen Beatty. Good morning, Colin. And Reese Marshburn. And both of these people were a surprise to me, and I shall learn who they are, what they do at Red 76, and we're going to just start right in with a question. First of all, Sam, you have Laura is your wife, and she works with you.
Laura, right? Baldwin, yeah.
Laura Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
And you live with a dog named Fred Milton.
This
and a
true.
Cat named Dottie.
Yes, yeah.
And you live down, do you still live down in the food quarter of Portland?
No, not anymore. We live up on Davis and 19th, but we're actually moving. These guys are moving into another house. So we're moving into their house over in Brooklyn, like 16th and Boise.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, before I was able to get you guys together and be talking to you, I had reams and reams of paper.
Lots of paper.
Very large paper. And I understand that you work out at Portland State, or you work down in the basement of Portland State. Is that right?
Over in the art department, Red 76 has been commissioned to do this project for an indefinite period of time called Travelers and Record. And basically, it's the project centers on focusing on daily travel as a commonality that we all share, and talking about the stories and experiences that come up when we step outside our door, what happens to us, and creating this archive of public submissions and turning those into free publications that we distribute around the country. So say we get a bunch of stories from Portland, we make a publication that goes back to Portlanders. We get a bunch of submissions from people in Detroit that goes back to Detroit. So creating a means to have people from one community share stories within that community, be able to create kind of a commons through this particular project. And then we do various events as well through Travelers and Record, and Colin and Reese are part of a project called Come In, We're Not Ready, which is a one-act open mic play night that we have at a place called the Town Lounge. And basically anybody can come and build cardboard sets and perform short plays about what happened to them that day.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how's that working out?
Very well so far, very well.
Do you get lots of takers on that?
It's been a small but very
consistent. But virile bunch.
Yes, very consistent crowd.
And that's good. Do you serve food?
No, it's just a bar, so drinks and conversation.
I see. Reese, what do you do with this? You're offering up your imagination, right?
I play the piano and accompany the entire evening. We felt that since it was an open mic night, that it would probably be helpful for everyone involved if we had a really a professional piano player who could really work with the audience to sort of provide a soundtrack that changed and interacted with the performance. So, for example, last night we worked with talking about who was the bass player that Ron Carter. Mm-hmm. We just released the first Travelers in Record publication. It's a newspaper with a couple of full color poster inserts within one of them, I was walking outside of the Travelers and Record office a couple of weeks ago, and there was this homeless man who had passed out, and people were providing him assistance, and the police came and took him away, and he was very afraid to leave his cart behind, so we brought his cart into our offices for him to come and pick up, and we left our information with the cops to give to him, but we haven't heard from him, so one of the submissions to this first publication is this poster.
Yes.
And it's basically just a call to this guy, Ricky, that we have his shopping cart and he should come pick it up. One of the items in the shopping cart was a bass instruction book.
And the cheese.
Lunchables.
Lunchables.
Yeah, and flowers.
It was such a sweet little collection.
Yeah, it was.
Uh-huh.
A big bunch of flowers.
And they dragged him away.
Yeah.
Left his cart and with his collection.
Yeah, well, we still have it.
Yeah.
It's waiting for him.
Uh-huh.
I hope that, there are 2,000 of those posters. All the publications go to pretty publicly accessible areas, coffee shops and newspaper boxes. Tie them up in newspaper bags and, throw them onto people's doorsteps. Hopefully, in one of these places, maybe Ricky runs across this publication and he realizes, oh, wow, they have my shopping cart, and he can get his Ron Carter bass instruction book back.
Mm. Well, do you think they put him in jail?
It doesn't say so on the poster, but it looked like he had drank a mighty portion of a bottle of port. So I think they brought him down to Hooper. So he was probably just there for the day.
Well, he appeared in his cart appeared in the paper.
Yes.
And now it's a huge paper. How many feet by how many feet is your newspaper?
It's pretty big. I don't know exactly. The folded portion comes out to roughly about 10 and a half by 17 and a quarter, I think.
And this is published in Salem?
Eagle Web Press for all of our newsprint we've been going through, and they're really great. They're wonderful to work with.
That's good, because they believe in the project.
They believe in the project, and they're really helpful in all the stages of getting it done, and they make sure that it gets done the way we want it to get done. So they're really pleasant people over there.
I want to let these other guys in on our conversation.
Great.
I know that you're the main guy.
I guess.
I mean, you've got a lot of information and have done an awful lot of the work.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a general concept here, Colin? Do you see a concept, or is it kind of free form?
I think that...
What is it?
What is it? In the short time that I've been working...
You're talking about that being an American question.
In the short time that I've been working with Sam, I've found that a lot of the work that we have done together is bound in a variety of ways. There's this overall theme of daily travels and the events that happen through our daily travels. And one interesting point is, again, at this come in, we're not ready, very interesting sort of themes will come up per night. Say last night, for instance, baseball came up three or four times throughout different people's one-act plays. And so while the overall theme is our commutes and our stories during commuting, I think that there are sub-themes that just emerge on a different on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is taking place down at the bar?
Yeah, the Town Lounge.
The Town Lounge.
20th place.
And then, now, how do you deal out the projects? Or do you? Do they draw it out of a hat? Or does it come up? Do people come there knowing that they're going to be performing?
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah, they don't have to if they don't want to, but they can come, and anybody who wants to do anything can.
So they've probably been putting this in place during the day sometime.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, I did one yesterday, and something happened to me, and I was like, well, I guess that's what I'll be doing at Come In, We're Not Ready.
Yeah, Come In, We're Not Ready.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. That's where that comes from.
Yeah.
And, Reese, it's your turn.
Yes. Well, I'd say that it's an initiative-based sort of entertainment evening, and in that people bring with themselves the interest in sharing something that they've had happen to them that day. I've personally been viewing ourselves in this group as sort of staff members, sort of facilitators. We're there to help them make their performance. And so we have a costume designer, we have a music set, we have two people who will sort of coax people through the ideas that we are sharing to encourage them to come up, and then we make it happen. So if we were in theater, we would all have black shirts on and we would be backstage, but there's no backstage at the Town Lounge. So and I like that aspect, that all of the workings are all around in front of the audience as well.
And that tends to come up in a lot of Red 76 projects too. There's no backstage.
No backstage.
Yeah.
One of the first active conceptual journeys that you took,
mm-hmm.
you were going to create this cultural district, right?
Oh, yeah, that's actually kind of recent. It's a project called How to Create a Cultural District and Have It Vanish into the Morning Mists of Dawn.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's have that again. It's so poetic.
How to Create a Cultural District and Have It Vanish into the Morning Mists of Dawn.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Really, it's about these cultural districts that pop up in cities that you know, kind of renewing city vigor, they tend to displace a lot of people. They tend to raise rents and sometimes in a positive fashion. Unfortunately, most oftentimes it seems to be in a negative fashion, kind of changing the urban landscape. So with the project, it's basically a it's a means of creating public discussion on ideas of creating cultural districts that aren't based on creating a fixed locality or focusing on objects, but why not create cultural districts that are about ephemerality and mobility, wherein they can appear and disappear at will all over a city, and it's about ideas and people rather than objects or a fixed location. So we've done these projects here in Portland, and then recently through a residency we had at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. We have a number of how-to projects. This is just one of them, and we had kind of a compendium of these how-to projects at Yerba Buena. So we did the How to Create a Cultural District in Oakland. And what happens is people come. It usually starts at about midnight. There are a number of artists who create work for a location. We have a map, so people who show up can figure out, you know, where the work is, what they're looking at, who the people are, and walk around the neighborhood and experience all these different things, whether that's, a recording that's playing on a jukebox in a doorway, or someone having a barbecue. It's just kind of, as I said, this kind of ephemeral, mobile cultural district. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning rolls around and everything disappears and we disperse to be able to do it in another location somewhere else.
Okay. Do you ever surprise the people who live there or the people who work there?
Yeah.
Are there ever anybody who wants to get doesn't understand and makes a noise about it?
Well, I guess I would answer that question with all of these projects, as they're usually so publicly based. Yeah, that's something that you have to think about when you're during the initial inception. And it depends from project to project. You kind of, you know, everything has, you have all the different tools that you need to use for all these different types of projects. And certainly, yeah, I mean, you come into people who don't understand what you're doing, but one of the really important things is learning how, within these types of projects, is improvising and learning how to talk to people when they come up to you and
include them,
that's not an invasion of any sense. Anybody who comes up is a participant or a non-participant, however mm-hmm. they want to make that choice. But anybody who wants to come in can come in, and how you can have a positive and open dialogue with anyone who talks to you there. So yeah, it's come up plenty of times, and usually it is really positive. It's come out great.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Do you think that's just typical of Portlanders, that they that it's some kind of entertainment?
Well, we've done projects all over the world, from Portland to Zagreb, Croatia, New York, Minneapolis, and it's the same anywhere.
I see.
So I guess it's a human thing.
What do you think the most? Let's get these other guys in here too. Colin, what has been your experience with people on the street when you have been working with them?
Well, one of the projects that I was witness to, was a participant in, took place at a coffee shop, and Sam related a story about the ownership of a piano and where this piano came from and where it had ended up. And at the conclusion of the presentation, we went to the house where the piano had ended up with new owners. We didn't know who they were, and we knocked on the door and asked if we could see the piano.
There were about 13 people with us on the other side of that door. And they let us in. So all of a sudden, I hadn't seen this piano in about three years. And
how did it look?
It looked great.
Did it look like a piano?
It did. It did. We got to play it a little bit, and 13 people, 13 strangers, unannounced, went up into these people's apartment, and they're like, "Wow, that's your piano? I never knew how it got here." And we told them the story about how that piano got there, and I had traded the piano for a hat with my friend Curtis. So, and he gave it to his at the time, girlfriend, now wife, and they had left the piano in that apartment and moved somewhere else. So we got to rediscover our joy of that piano for a brief, fleeting moment.
Sure. And did Reese come with you and play anything? What did you play? What did you select?
Well, I actually didn't play that piano. There was were they moving? It's possible they were moving.
One of the people was moving out at the time. There was a mattress upright in the living room at the time.
That's a good sign.
Yeah,
and there was a feeling of bewilderment as well from the people we were visiting. So it was sort of it would have been nice to sit down and play
numb.
A bit.
Well, it's kind of, not every day do you come home and you find 13 strangers in your living room who want to look at your piano unannounced.
Were they all male, or were there...
It was mixed.
Female
persons,
too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I have a huge sheet of paper that tells me about... I'm going to open this huge... Why are you using such big paper? It's so hard to read.
You know, I think that, too.
Well,
For a long time, I did these very kind of small full-color booklets, and then I started doing newsprint, and I might go back to the small booklets.
Well,
it's a little unwieldy.
You might need it for a blanket sometime.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What I'm pointing out is that there are other people concerned with this group.
It's a roving...
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting here opening this vast newspaper. And tell about the affair that's coming up that Kristen Kennedy is in.
TBA? That project? Or the affair at the Jupiter?
The affair at the Jupiter.
Oh, okay.
I think is that important to talk about? It seemed to be that there were a lot of people that are artists, mm-hmm. painters, and people who work with painting processes and so forth.
Well, I know Laurel Gitlin and Stuart Herodner, who used to be the curator over at PICA, put that on. And I haven't been involved in that project over the, I think it's run twice now, and this is going to be the third year. But I know those guys, and it seems good. I like it. It's, I mean, it's a market-driven event. Things are for sale, and that's... though I'm not in opposition to that. I don't really have anything to sell.
Yeah,
I don't make anything, but I find it really positive. I think it's great, and I think it's great for Portland, too.
Oh, I do, too.
Yeah.
But it isn't part of Red 76.
No, it
isn't.
Oh,
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that there are quite a few very fine painters in that show. And I don't know when it's coming up, but
October.
There's so much.
There's a lot in there.
There's that I have a hard time. I kind of get lost in a description too.
Yeah.
And if I was to ask you what the concept of 76 is, could you, the three of you, please tell me?
I would say
tell the world.
most of the projects tend to revert back to a means to create dialogue within public space, a means to get people together through some fabricated framework, to get people talking. And sometimes it's on a specific discussion point. Other times it's really just to create a means to for people to find a commonality with one another, to create any sort of discussion. And when that pops up, that pops up. It doesn't necessarily have to be one fixed identity. So really just a charging space and creating a means for people to be aware of where they are and aware of who they're inhabiting that space with. And I think that's a thread that can be found in all of the projects running from early, more traditional projects we did about like 6 years ago when we would throw these big kind of art parties in warehouses up in North Portland to these more kind of ephemeral, engaged, sometimes quite invisible projects that happen now all over the place.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Okay. These include the ordinary citizen.
Oh yeah,
It's a comment on various parts of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it includes and it is a more of a drama. Do you think, or is it what? We don't have
it's
to put
more of a
dictionary. We don't have to put a finger on it.
Yeah.
Actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to hear you talk more about it because I like the conversation that goes with it and the poetry.
Oh,
there's
thank you.
A lot of poetry. And I want to talk about everything. But I don't have the time. But you did make these very nice little books. Where are these available, these little magazines?
They're
small.
They come for free at all of the projects. It's really, since the projects are usually so ephemerally based, it's nice for someone to be able to take something home with and not be charged for it, too. It's just kind of this little totemic item. It can inhabit the feeling that was represented at that time, a remembrance of sorts. And then for people who weren't there, it can kind of be this mysterious item for this thing that they didn't experience, a gateway for them to lead into other projects.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you tell me who was working with you? Do you have a person that works with you? I'm talking to... Jimmy, I do need your
Colin,
name again
yeah,
now,
yeah.
Colin, because among all his paper, I have lost a little thing that has your name on it.
There's a C there, yeah.
Colin Beatty.
Yes.
tell me more about yourself.
Well, I grew up in Olympia, Washington, with my friend Reese, and we parted ways shortly after high school and went different directions. I went to school in Leeds, England.
Ah,
and,
Leeds, England.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Got a English degree there. And Reese went north to Bellingham, Washington, mm-hmm. and got a music degree.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were mentioning earlier, the house that Sam is moving into, Colin and I live in now, and we hadn't seen each other pretty much for more than a day and maybe 5 years or something, 5 or 6, what do you say, Reese?
I'd say, yeah, close to 5 years of sort of, as you were traveling around various places. You lived in Leeds, went to the University of Leeds. You also, he's being modest,
China.
He went to China. He traveled in Italy and in Spain. And during that time, I didn't see a lot of you, Colin. You were you know, home for Christmas more or less.
And this holiday
for once or twice during the day. So this year, I've been living in Portland, working on a riverboat, working as the piano player for a cruise ship that goes up and down the Columbia.
Really? Boy, you learn a lot doing that, though, don't you?
You do.
Does it get tiresome from time to time?
I think the lifestyle is occasionally tiresome, but what I've found enriching about the experience is my role as sort of a musical historian and keeping keeping tabs on the music that I play and those who appreciate the music that I play, who are more in the elderly category of society.
Would
than
you
in
please
the...
play I Could Have Danced All Night?
Yes, exactly. And we do.
And it's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
And so while I was doing that, Colin moved back into Portland, and so we sort of, having known each other for a while, decided to live together at a house that we've named the Brooklyn Yard, and we're now passing that house on to Sam.
We're taking Laura and I are taking over the Brooklyn Yard. I'd like to mention one project that's going to be happening.
Can
at
I ID
Brooklyn
the
Yard.
Station
oh,
first?
Oh yes, please.
But please excuse me while I do that because I forgot to. This is 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, and 107 FM in the Willamette Valley. And this is Art Focus, and this is Julie Bernard, and I am accompanied this morning by three gentlemen, Colin Beatty and Reese Marshburn and Sam Gould. And we are discussing, this morning we are discussing Red 76, and we have but 1 minute. But a lot can be accomplished in 1 minute.
Well, maybe with that 1 minute, there's a sound project that I would love to discuss that's going to happen on July 4th. I would love everyone to get involved with. It's the closing project for our residency in San Francisco. It's a new how-to project called Bring the War Home. And basically focusing on how American media has whitewashed our contribution to Iraq, however you want to term that, to be able to once again create a public forum to discuss what's happening over there and our role within that. So we've been kind of scouring the internet and through video blog sites like YouTube and audio blog sites, we've garnered audio and video that U.S. soldiers have shot of their daily life in combat in Iraq and created a sound collage of gunfire and explosions and their voices and stories about what it's like for them day-to-day in Iraq as well as Iraqi citizens. And that sound collage is available on our website, and we encourage people, along with your fireworks on the 4th of July, to go and download this MP3 of gunfire and explosions from Iraq and play it rather loudly at your barbecue all across the country to help us remind and create public discussion as to what those fireworks we light off every 4th of July actually mean and what they represent. And let us start talking about why we are in Iraq and what that future is going to be. So if you go to red76.com/warhome.html, or if you just go to the website and go to how-to, you'll find it.
Okay. So where should we be for the next event? And
you should be at the website and have a fun time on the 4th of July and start discussing what it means to be an American and what you want that to mean in the future.
Okay, very good.
And every other Wednesday, we're come in, we're not ready.
Yes, at the Town Lounge, 714 20th Place. And you can come and share your stories at Daily Travel.
Starts at 7:30 and it goes until 10. Please come down. We'd love to
very
have you.
Very important. Yeah. Have you got one last word? Quick. We
can't.
No,
that's fine. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, I hope you'll come again soon.
Oh, certainly.
Let me know.
Whenever you want us.
I like Red 76.
Oh, we like you.
Thank you. And this is Julie Bernard in Art Focus.
And that concludes the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, June 29th. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!